is first up. Every morning, come and hang on first up. The only show that brings the bang. It's first up.
You're listening to First Up on TSN 1050.
This is First Up.
You ain't first, you're last.
It's the second hour of First Up here on TSN 1050. We stream worldwide, tsn1050.ca, on the iHeartRadio Canada app. Make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes and on Spotify. Give us a nice rating, a review, a subscription, of course, and we're very thankful and appreciative for just that. And we are thankful and appreciative that the Toronto Maple Leafs are back in action after finally 3 straight days off. And listen, there's only so much we can discuss. Oh, the Atlantic Division, how important is it for the Leafs to win it so they avoid Florida and Tampa Bay? And the answer is very important. But nonetheless, they are back on the ice tonight in New York. The boys flew out yesterday afternoon, but they will be without some key pieces this evening, namely Jake Muzzin, who hasn't had the best year. He's been kind of a point of discussion throughout the course of the regular season so far, in that he and Justin Hall as the second pairing, they've struggled certainly at times, no doubt about that. Jake Muzzin himself hasn't been the player that we've come to expect. And listen, there's a number of reasons probably for that. I mean, COVID is definitely one. Injuries are another. Maybe just wear and tear over the years being the third, but you will not see Jake Muzzin in the lineup for at least a week after he suffered a concussion on Saturday night. It was kind of weird how he practiced and spoke with the media and then showed up that day and said the next day and said, listen, I'm not feeling great, and he was diagnosed ultimately with the concussion after that big hit he took on Saturday night. So the Leafs D-core is as follows tonight. Morgan Rielly, TJ Brody, your top pair, as has been customary for most of the season. The second pair is Rasmus Sandin and Timothy Liljegren. So a very young and inexperienced second pair, which was previously your third pair. And you'll have Travis Dermott and Alex Biega on the third pairing. So could be a little difficult for the Leafs on the back end tonight. So they might be relying on more offense than they do usually.
Well, I remember early on in the year where people raised their eyebrows about the comment I said regarding Timothy Liljegren, and it wasn't a shot at Timothy Liljegren. It was more addressing the lack of depth on the Maple Leafs blue line. And I said, if Timothy Liljegren is your seventh defenseman, you're in trouble this year. And
now he's third.
I think you're going to get a prime example of exactly what I was referring to in tonight's game, because you've completely eliminated your second pair with Muzzin and Hall, and you're asking Rasmus Sandin and Timothy Liljegren to play, you know, an expanded role and more minutes into the game. And, you know, now your third player is thinned out even more. So, and against the best team in the Metro Division, against the New York Rangers, which, you know, you go back, you know, just over the last couple of games that the Leafs and Rangers have played, it just seems like the Rangers have the Leafs number right now. So great opportunity for the guys in defense, but concerning right now if you're the Maple Leafs, because, you know, you thought everything you thought about Jake Muzzin and his health leading up until yesterday. And it was yesterday where it was highlighted about some of his struggles and stuff like that. And I jokingly said on Leafs Lunch yesterday before the announcement was made that he was out with a concussion, is that maybe he didn't practice yesterday because of a bruised ego, you know, because, you know, all the criticism he was taking about, you know, his play this year. And look, he's 32 years old. Okay. Everything we know about Jake Muzzin is, you know, how we can respect, you know, how hard he plays the game. But if you look at the last two playoff series, it's an injury that he has suffered in both of those playoff series that have been very impactful in the Maple Leafs, you know, moving on or not. Because remember going back to Columbus in the bubble, he got injured in the second game and Martin Marincin comes in. And they just have no answer. They found a way to get it to a game five. Remember in game four, they were down 3-0 with 5 minutes left and they scored 3 goals to take it overtime.
What a night it was.
So they were lucky to get to game five. And then last year against Montreal, he gets hurt in game six. He's unavailable in game seven. And they come out with a lifeless effort in game seven against the Montreal Canadiens and lose. So
One, you can see signs of maybe his body breaking down. Two, you can see signs of him slowing down just because of age. But it doesn't mean he can't still play the game and isn't a guy that you can rely on to play big minutes for you. He just, and I said this yesterday on Leafs Lunch, Jake Muzzin has to understand where he is in his career and almost look at a guy like Jason Spezza as a perfect example on how to translate or evolve his game based on where he is in his career. Because Jason Spezza, for most of his career, was a top-end guy. But look how this guy has sort of converted his game right now to allow himself to play and stay in the league, playing limited minutes and in a completely different role. And that's sort of what Jake Muzzin has to sort of represent in his game, where maybe all the things he thought he can do, is something he can still do, but maybe at a slower pace. So do less and do things that are more simple in your game. Maybe don't, put yourself in a position where you're playing that physical anymore. And playing physical isn't necessarily, going out and trying to hit everybody around the ice. It's playing physical, winning your net front battles, winning your board battles, winning your stick battles. And doing the simple things that you're expecting a defenseman to do. Good first pass, good positioning, join the play when you see the appropriate time to do it, and contribute when you can. And that's got to be Jake Muzzin's game, for the Maple Leafs for the rest of this season. Now, when you're talking about the injury, the concerning thing about that, well, this is something that happened on Saturday night, which, he had a pretty big blow there with Klim Kostin, big boy in St. Louis. And you just wonder that because it's taken so many days to finally realize that, they said that, two games, that we're going to give him the next two games off, but there really is no timeline when you're dealing with a concussion and with a head injury. So you just hope and pray for the Leafs' sake that this is something that he can overcome and get through quickly.
Okay, I want to go back to something you said about kind of a Spezza comparison. I mean, you weren't comparing the two players directly. Clearly, Jake Muzzin is much more important to the Toronto Maple Leafs than Jason Spezza is. That's no indictment on Spezza. That's just a reality of the situation. Not only in the roles they play respectively, Muzzin's their shutdown defenseman. He's going to go up against the top opposition for their opponents. And not to mention, he makes $5.6 million a year, not only this year, for the next 2 years as well, while Spezza is on basically a minimum deal. So the two comparisons, I think I understand what you mean in the way that kind of Spezza has accepted the new role when he's been tasked to do. But I'm telling you, man, if that's the case with Jake Muzzin and needs to step back and kind of enter a new phase in his career, that's a major problem for the Leafs, because Jake Muzzin was, and I don't want to be too harsh on Justin Hall, considering, he's been a really good player for the Leafs, all things considered, but he was being propped up in many respects by Jake Muzzin's really, really strong play. So if Jake Muzzin is indeed in that new phase of his career where he can't do what he used to do, not only for this year, and Muzzin's an essential cog if the Leafs want to go deep in the playoffs, but you got two more years at 5.6, and you're a team that is tapped right up against the salary cap ceiling. So that's a concerning idea. If that's how it's going to go for Jake Muzzin, how you're laying it out, that is a terrifying prospect for the Toronto Maple Leafs, if you ask me.
Well, how other way are you supposed to look?
He's got to get back to where he was last year and the year before.
Okay, you look at Jake Muzzin this year, right from the start of the season. Do you not see him slowing down?
For sure, and that's what I mean when I say it's terrifying.
Right.
Because they need, if that's the case, and listen, we hear so much about teams like Florida and Tampa. Oh, we're going out and we're going to be aggressive on the market. We're going to go out and get John Klingberg. That's the big rumor, whether it's Tampa or Florida or Carolina. Best teams in the NHL, they're going out and trying to add some of the best defensemen in the NHL, at least the guys who are most readily available in the trade market. If that's the case with Muzzin, and we know Riley and Brody are the number one pair, but the Muzzin and whoever it is, whether it's Hall or Liljegren, or we'll see if they can make a deal leading up to the deadline. If it's Muzzin and Hall, the way that they've performed so far this year, they will get chewed up by the second lines of Florida. Yeah. What is Huberto and Barkov, what are those guys going to do to Muzzin and Hall the way they've been playing? Or what is Point and Kucherov and Sorelli? All these guys are just going to eat these guys up. So it's either Jake Muzzin gets back to what he once was and is able to bring Justin Hall to the point where he was last year and the year before, or they need to go out and get someone who can help him. Because I don't think there's an in-between. It's one or the other. If the Leafs want to view themselves as serious Stanley Cup contenders, they need to make a decision on that. And this injury to Muzzin is not going to help the cause, because we don't know how long he could be out for. We know how fickle concussions can be. So you hope for the Leafs he's able to get back and get his game back to where it once was, because if not, it's going to be a big-time problem.
You're absolutely right. I don't think there's any denying that. But, you know, there's a reason why, you know, the conversation around him 2 days ago was basically the struggles that he's endured this season. And partly because the struggles that we've seen is he just looks slower out there. And when you're slower, you're doing everything slower. You're moving the puck slower. You're playing physical slower. You're playing defense slower. And is that a sign of the mileage that he's put on? Is that a sign of age catching up to him? Whatever it is, there's a way to maneuver around this. It's having a conversation with him and just basically tell him to do, look, everything that you're doing right now, you know, or everything that you think you need to bring to this team, clearly you're not doing it at the level you expect and we expected you, but find a better way to do it where you're more efficient. And that's where I made the Jason Spezza comparable, because this guy is 38 years old and still finding a way to be, you know, an important player on this team.
Yeah.
When I say important player,
he's a fourth liner, though. Like,
I understand he's a fourth liner, but he's playing a fourth line role pretty good.
Absolutely. There's no doubt. Right? But I don't think there's a comparison between the two. I really don't, in that Muzzin is just so much more important. He's going to be playing 25. He needs to be playing almost 25 minutes a night in the playoffs.
Yes, but there's
only playing 9 minutes.
There's a simpler way. Like, there's a simpler way to play Jake Muzzin's position, which is something that he has to embrace. Just a simpler way. Like, because to expect him to play 20, 25 minutes a night for your team and be effective, that's not the Jake Muzzin of 32 years old. It's not.
Then the Leafs are in big trouble, if you ask me. Like,
well,
remember
for the expansion draft, I suggested that they should maybe think of exposing him because of the cap hit that he represents, and people, you know, just scoffed at me for saying it. Well, you know, you just got to put the pieces of the puzzle together and look at the timeline over him and what's what he's been affected by, obviously injury, obviously age, and now, you know, there's a slowness that's been added to his game. And I'm not going to sit here and you know, raise the alarm bells and say, oh, he's a liability out there. No, he's not a liability. He just has to make an adjustment to his game where, you know, the understanding in his game is that, you know, he's not the same player that he was, and maybe he doesn't need to be, but find a way to be more efficient with the skill set that you're limited to right now.
He might not be the same player that he once was, and I guess we don't know definitively that is the case. This year would lead you to believe he's not. And in my opinion, if he's not the player he once was, the Leafs need to go out and get a player who could
absolutely
either play alongside him or complement the third pair and really build up that decor, because that'll be a big problem in the playoffs. There's a lot of strong offensive talent in the Atlantic Division, and the Leafs can't play Riley and Brody 35 minutes a night, so it's one of the other.
You know how you do that? You find a way to isolate him by putting him with a partner that can help, you know, help hide those mistakes or help hide those glaring, those glaring deficiencies that he's showing. One, by maybe playing him with a guy that's more safe, a guy that's a better skater, a guy that's more trustworthy with his puck decisions. And yeah, you know what? Justin Hall was that guy last year, but this is the guy that's facing the same amount of struggles. I wouldn't say the same amount.
No, maybe even more.
Similar.
Right?
Pretty similar.
I guess maybe similar, yeah.
Right? And together, they've just been inconsistent. I wouldn't say they've been bad. Because
at times, they've been bad.
Okay, but
inconsistent,
you're right.
They've
been inconsistent. So remember when Morgan Rielly was having those same struggles? It was, okay, we've got to go find somebody to play with Morgan Rielly. And I think they did a good job identifying that guy in TJ Brody. So maybe now that's, if Jake Muzzin is a guy that you still expect to be, you know, a second pairing guy and a guy you expect to play, you know, big minutes, go out and find somebody that can isolate him and protect him against
standing out against some of those glaring holes that he's showing right now, or maybe it's a guy that's more focused on defense, a guy that's a better puck mover, a guy that's a better skater. The problem is, where are you going to go find that guy?
That's exactly it. And, right? And you know what? You could go out and find that guy, but you'll have 5, 6, 7 teams competing for the right. same guy on the trade market, and you might have to give up a top prospect, another first-round pick, and then we know how much draft capital the Leafs have given up over the last couple of years in an effort to win the Stanley Cup. Listen, that's exactly what they should be doing. They are in absolute win-now mode, and hopefully you imagine Kyle Dubas and the Toronto Maple Leafs brass understand that, and they're going to be very aggressive on the market trying to add to their defense corps. We'll continue this conversation with Dave Poulin, our TSN hockey analyst, when he joins us for Leafs Breakfast at 7:45. But coming up next, the biggest story in the hockey world involved Leon Draisaitl on a back-and-forth with an Edmonton reporter yesterday. We'll head to the scene. We'll head down to Edmonton, Alberta, and catch up with our friend Dustin Nielsen from TSN Radio in Edmonton, who understands the temperature is hot in Oilerland, and it kind of popped off a little bit yesterday in that back and forth. So we'll go down to Edmonton with Dustin Nielsen next. This is First Up. Back here on First Up, Karolnik and Koliakovo with you and Carlo. Edmonton, the talk of the hockey world right now, both on and off the ice. The team, they've lost 6 in a row. They can't get a save from any of their goaltenders. And now, Leon Draisaitl, he's getting pissy. And if you wonder what I'm talking about, I'd be surprised if any of our audience hadn't heard the back and forth between Draisaitl and Jim Matheson, the reporter in Edmonton who's covered the team for many, many years, back to Gretzky and Curry and Messier back in the day. But let's take a listen to the clip, and we'll welcome in our good buddy Dustin Nielsen from TSN Radio Edmonton on the other side. This is Jim Matheson's back and forth with Leon Draisaitl yesterday.
Lots of reasons for why the Oilers are playing the way they are in terms of winning and losing. What do you think is the number one reason for the losses now? Is there one thing that you, in your own mind, you're saying we got to get better at that?
Yeah, we have to get better at everything.
Would you like to expand on that?
No. You can do that. You know everything.
Why are you so pissy, Leon? Why are you so pissy?
I'm not. I'm just answering your
question. Yeah, you are. Whenever I ask you a question.
I gave you an answer.
Not very good one. Okay. I have one more for you. Leon, you show your frustration on the ice last game against Ottawa. Is that a good thing when you show it so the other team knows you're frustrated?
Yeah, it's a great thing, for sure.
Okay, I think we're done. Good.
Yeah. Okay, I think we're done. Yep. All right. See you later.
All right. Let's bring in Dustin Nielsen, host of the Nielsen Show on TSN 1260 in Edmonton. Dustin, you're not going to be pissy with us this morning, are you?
No, I thought you guys wanted me on to talk about Brendan Perlini getting bumped up to McDavid's wing, but
ooh. Hey, Brendan Perlini had the sort of glass half full approach yesterday in his press conference.
Yeah. He's a little bit of a different breath of fresh air, but yeah, here we are, guys. Yeah, I mean, what can you say? it's a bad look for everybody. Like, it's just it a is. Bad look for everybody. Like, Leon Draisaitl could have handled it better. He was clearly frustrated, and I think he's been frustrated by Matheson for a little while. And Matheson, I mean, clearly he's frustrated with the player. I mean, Jim's been covering this team longer than I've been alive. And, you know, he went right at Leon yesterday, which I just don't get it. But it's just a bad look for everybody.
So, Dustin, help me understand, is there a backstory here between the relationship with Jim Matheson and Draisaitl? I know you said that, you know, they've had their altercations before, but what led to this? And I know, look, things in Edmonton are kind of crazy right now. People are screaming scorched earth. People are screaming at the GM, at the players and stuff like that. They've played one game in 7 days, so when you lose that one game, it just helps elevate a bigger problem. But has there been an exchange before between Matheson and Draisaitl? Do these guys like each other? Give us a little bit of a backstory between these two.
Yeah, I think the main driving force behind it all is just, I mean, 6 weeks of struggling and having to answer the same questions, you know, over and over and over again. And, you know, I'm not down there at the rink every day like all those guys. And I know Rashog yesterday on my show said, you know, they're getting sick and tired of asking the same questions over and over and over again. So, you know, on that side of it, I can see why the players would be frustrated with it as well. And, you know, at least they kind of get rotated in. One day it'll be McDavid, the other day it'll be Drysdale. I don't know if specifically there's one thing, or, you know, there's a vicious history between Jim Matheson and Leon Drysdale, but, you know, Matheson, I mean, he's old school. Like, that's just how it is. Uh-huh. And I think the entire, you know, dressing room probably, you know, just a little frustrated with an older guy asking questions during the slump. I mean, I know everybody goes, you know, Matheson covered the team in the 80s, but it was a different in the 80s. Like, that's just not how you approach things anymore. And Leon, I mean, on Leon's side of things, you know, he has been a little short at times with you know, certain questions from the media. But, I mean, this is just, it all comes back around to what they're going through right now. You know who wasn't having any issues with anything? The entire team when they were 16-5. The media conferences, everybody was laughing and giggling, and people are chanting MVP and Bison King and whatever outside the glass right by the media room. So, I mean, it is night and day. You can just flip a switch in this market, and here I am on the radio, and I've got a 4-hour show coming up today, and we're going to be talking about a member of the media and a player. Like, it blows my mind.
Well, we had that in Toronto forever, right? With Phil Kessel and Dion Phaneuf going head to head with certain media members here, including Dave Festruck, who will join us in about an hour's time here on our show. So this is nothing new to us. Maybe it's just a kind of a delayed symptom of frustration when it comes to different media markets here in Canada. Dustin Nielsen is our guest from TSN Radio in Edmonton, and I think it's pretty clear right now. One of the major issues, if not the major issue with the Oilers, is their goaltending. You know, Stuart Skinner giving up 5 goals in the third period to the Ottawa Senators back on Saturday night. And we know the issues
COVID,
with Koskinen.
Man. He had COVID. COVID hit him in the third period.
Yeah, I don't know. Koskinen, Mike Smith, it's been tough. Do you anticipate there's something coming down with the Oilers and a change in goal?
No. That's the toughest part. I think their best hope, and probably their plan right now, is to, you know, keep their fingers crossed that Mike Smith can stay healthy the rest of the season. And so far he hasn't been healthy at all the entire season. But I think they're hoping, and to be honest with you, it's probably their best chance, best solution between the pipes, is hoping Mike Smith can stay healthy and regain, you know, the form that he had last year, in which, you know, he was pretty darn good. He had a save percentage above .920 last year, which is, I think they just ran out of the attempt to go out and get a goalie, and then say, I can't get one. I guess we'll bring back Mike Smith again this year. And you're right. I mean, there's a lot of issues with this team right now. Like, this is what happens when you go on a slide like this. It's the exact bizarro world from the first 2 months of the season, where power play's awesome, penalty kill's awesome. Heck, even the goaltenders in the first 20 games had a .916 save percentage. Since then, the save percentage has been like .860, .870, .880. Power play is just, you know, still decent, but not what it was. Penalty kill has completely fallen off a cliff. But to me, it's so difficult to evaluate anything as a group when you can't get solid goaltending. Like, how do you know how good this team really is when their goaltender gives up the first goal in essentially 80% of your games? We're doing a draft on our show today of the biggest mistakes the Oilers have made over the last 30 years. And, like,
it's a good idea.
7 of them are going to be in the last 3, if you can believe that. Like, and one of them is Ken Holland's inability to get a legitimate number one goaltender in 3 years. When he came here, the first thing you're like, what's he got to do first? You're like, get a goalie. Yeah. And we're sitting here right now going, hey, what does this team really need? Well, they got to get a goalie. So, you know, nothing's really been accomplished on that front.
So there's so much to get into, Dustin, and I just want to revert back to the Leon Draisaitl clip. And, you know, a lot of, obviously, it was a talk of social media yesterday and talk of the hockey world. And some of my comments that I made towards it is there is a fine line being walked here, and I don't know who to blame for it. I don't know if there is someone to blame for it. And it's both by, I would say, 3 people. It's management, it's leadership, and it's media. It's management because they haven't grasped this and got it under control, in the sense that they see the frustrations that the players are sharing right now, both on the ice and in the media. There hasn't been a discussion with leadership to say, guys, I understand things are bad, but don't make things worse for yourself by putting your foot in your mouth in the media, because we're in a Canadian market right now, and the pressure could get a lot worse if you say things that maybe you're not supposed to say. In regards to leadership,
I mean, you're seeing Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl in back-to-back sort of media conferences show signs of weakness with their answers. That doesn't do anybody any favors, including their own team, because if you see their leaders showing that frustration in the public, what do things look like in the room? Then there's a fine line being walked with the media, because in incidents like what we saw yesterday, if the Edmonton Oilers don't make the playoffs this year, the last thing the media wants to do is put any pressure on these star players to start forcing themselves out of town. So based on the three things that I just mentioned, how does this all get fixed in Edmonton?
I went over the Florida Panthers tomorrow night, I guess. Like I said, I mean, when they were 16-5, you know, leadership group looked pretty good. Media didn't have anything to complain about. In fact, it got to the point where it was probably on the other side of it. They got tired of asking the same questions about, hey, three more power play goals. Like, how are things going so well? So you're right, though. I mean, those are the three main issues. It's just it's a weird vibe here, man. Like, I know, you know, Toronto media takes a lot of heat at times too, obviously, but it's a little bit of a weird vibe. Like, I was told that, you know, the Edmonton media leadership group had a chat with the Oilers PR like 2 days ago. And I guess whatever they said didn't work or inspired the media more, because, you know, I was listening to Bob Stauffer's show on the other station here in town yesterday, and he said that, you know, he kind of sensed that something was going to happen yesterday, and that Jim Matheson was looking to get into a little bit of a, you know, to stir things up a bit. I'm like, why?
Yeah.
Like, why would a member of the media want to, you know, go in to a press conference trying to send a message or something? Like, I just don't understand that aspect of it. And as far as the leadership group goes, we had this chat yesterday in one of my podcasts that I do with Matt Cassian and Joaquin Gage. We talked about it a little bit. And, you know, I asked them because I thought it was a legitimate question, and Cassian had a great example of it. But, you know, I think your entire team sort of takes on the mindset of your leadership group. I mean, that's what a leadership group is supposed to do. It's supposed to set your identity. And when things are good, leadership group with McDavid and Draisaitl and Nurse and Nugent Hopkins and now Hyman a little bit, and I don't know how Duncan Keith factors in there.
They're supposed to protect the group.
Yeah, yeah. Like, it's their job to protect the group. It's their job to, you know, be the ones who, especially even getting out of this slump right now. Like, I practiced a couple days ago. McDavid and Nurse were leading these battle drills, and, you know, if this team needs to, you know, be more difficult to play against, which it does, I mean, I know those guys don't play that style of game, McDavid and Draisaitl, but, you know, maybe they need to establish something like that so the rest of the group comes along. And, you know, I guess it kind of goes the same way with handling the media. I mean, whether it's this market or people out of the market, you know, pointing things out, you know, it's not an overall great look for the group when, you know, your captain really doesn't have anything to say, and I don't blame him for it, but he just doesn't. And then, you know, your assistant captain comes out and goes at it with Jim Matheson. And, I mean, if I was in Draisaitl's position, I might have gone the same way. So it's just, it's extremely frustrating. But the sad thing is, and it might not be sad, but it's kind of just the state of affairs in professional sports. If they go out and win four in a row, things are going to be a lot
winning
better.
Solves everything.
Yeah,
winning
it's like I sometimes go, man, we are just such suckers in, you know, around professional sports, but it's just the truth. Like, winning just solves everything.
Dustin, there's certain days in sports radio where you're just so rich in content, you know exactly what those 4 hours are going to be. We do a 4-hour show here in Toronto. I know you do a 4-hour show in Edmonton. I imagine you will not be short on content today as you begin your show in about 25 minutes time on TSN 1260. Thank you for doing this for us before your show begins. And, I mean, if we have to call you again before your show, I mean, hopefully there's more good stuff happening in Edmonton. I imagine this is not the last time we'll be requiring your services. Yeah, maybe a big goalie trade. Thanks for doing this, my friend. We appreciate it.
Easiest show ever today, boy. Have a good one.
All right. That's Dustin Nielsen from TSN Radio in Edmonton. And great guy, great broadcaster. And he and his team do a fantastic job on our sister station out there in the City of Champions. At least that's what they were formerly called. No, not so much anymore with the way the Oilers are playing. that type
and
of
hockey. I want to dissect into this a little more, and I'm not sure if we have time after the break to do it, but there's still a lot of more that I want to get into about the Edmonton Oilers and share my opinion about how everything yesterday was handled.
I love it. Well, we got another two and a half hours to go. I mean, we have no shortage of time to get to, and we'll be joined by Dave Poulin. We'll talk about the situation between Draisaitl and Matheson and the Oilers as a whole with Dave. We'll talk about the hiring of Kent Hughes by the Montreal Canadiens as their new general manager, and we'll look ahead to tonight's game for the Toronto Maple Leafs, who are back in action at the New York Rangers, a game you can hear right here on TSN 1050. We continue here on First Up, Korolnik and Koliakovo after this. Dave Poulin will join us in 7 minutes. We'll look at the Leafs and Rangers with Dave, talking about Jake Muzzin's current place with the Toronto Maple Leafs and how Dave believes he's equipped to handle the immense task ahead of him if the Leafs want to go deep into the playoffs. Jake Muzzin's going to be playing significant minutes and a very significant role, but as Carlos said, is Jake Muzzin the player that he once was? We'll ask Dave that in about 7 minutes, but Coco, our boy Jason McIntyre from Fox Sports made headlines yesterday. I don't know if you saw this. He had a hot rumor about the health status of Jimmy Garoppolo ahead of San Fran's visit to Green Bay. The tweet as follows: texted someone in San Fran 90 minutes ago asking about Jimmy G. Lots of rumors the hand and shoulder are not good, like may not start good. And the line, the betting line, has surged market-wide to Green Bay -6. Somebody has even more intel. Now, that is not necessarily true. It's still 5.5 in many places, but I guess some money came in on Green Bay. But what do you make of your boy McIntyre's report? And if Jimmy G is indeed out, I mean, Trey Lance is going to be in some serious trouble against Green Bay.
Yeah, this would be some very unfortunate news if you're a 49ers fan because, you know, obviously Jimmy Garoppolo, when he starts as a member of the San Francisco 49ers, he gives them the best chance to win over Trey Lance. I mean, I know Trey Lance started a game late in the season in Garoppolo's absence. It was against the Houston Texans, and, you know, he had a surge there in the third quarter where he looked good, but going into Lambeau, playing against that offense in Green Bay, you can't feel too confident if a guy like Trey Lance is under center. So we all knew that Garoppolo was playing a little bit banged up against Dallas with the finger, with the hand. You know, we saw it taped up, but, you know, now if it's a shoulder injury, I mean, look, at the end of the day, San Fran doesn't really have one of those high-powered throwing offenses as it is because their strength is running the ball and using these trick plays that they like to use on offense with, you know, guys like Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk and stuff like that, and, you know, George Kittle in the tight end. So, you know, they're not really built to throw the ball deep passes. So maybe that is something that could, you know, isolate Jimmy Garoppolo if he does decide to play. But I think the bigger story in San Fran right now is, did you see the boombox that these guys come out of the locker room in?
Yeah, that's like what we do every morning on First Up. When we were in studio, we always had the boombox. 20 fingers would carry it.
Dude.
If we played New York State of Mind.
Dude, if I would have saw that in the pregame, I would have hammered the San Francisco 49ers. Because just watching that scene of that team walking out together with the music blaring and the boombox, Dallas was defeated right before the game started.
Yeah, it's a tough look. I was pumped up too.
Oh my God, that was unreal.
That was a good song too. Chrissy, we went in to cue up that song and play it a little bit later in the show. The song that the 49ers were walking out to as they enter the Dallas Cowboys stadium last week. And I don't know, the Jimmy G thing, that's a major concern. Because if he can't go, Trey Lance can't throw. So,
yeah.
Trey Lance, unbelievable athlete. He will not be able to keep the defense honest. So, that run game that San Fran prides itself on is at least somewhat predicated on the threat of Jimmy G being able to throw the ball downfield. Uh-huh. And if that threat's not there, San Fran could have some major issues against a team in Green Bay that is finally getting healthy on defense. You're going to see Jair Alexander and Za'Darius Smith return to practice today. So huge, huge additions to the Green Bay D ahead of their showdown at Lambeau Field with the San Francisco 49ers. Dave Poulin, our TSN hockey analyst, joins us next. You're listening to First Up.
This is Leafs Breakfast.
It's the Leafs and the New York Rangers tonight from Madison Square Garden, a game you can hear right here on TSN 1050. Certainly we'll get into that subject of conversation with our next guest, Dave Poulin. But the Montreal Canadiens, they have a new general manager. The Edmonton Oilers, one of their top players, is getting into heated arguments with reporters in the midst of press conferences. No shortage of great topics for Dave Poulin as he joins us here on Leafs Breakfast. This is First Up. Good morning, Dave. How are you?
Very snowy in Ottawa this morning. It is a cold. I think the weather might be following me a little bit, Aaron, right now. I see another looming for the second time in 2 weeks. I see a looming minus 31 in the days ahead. So ooh-hoo. I think it's following me. I really do.
Yikes, Pooley. Yikes. Well, speaking of a following, you know, the news was following the Edmonton Oilers last night because of the headlines that Leon Draisaitl made with his beef and Jim Matheson. I'm not sure if you know Jim Matheson at all, but obviously, you know, a little bit of controversy that was spewed there between Draisaitl and Jim Matheson. What did you make of what you heard and maybe some of the background that you know in regards to Jim Matheson?
You know, I did watch the clips, and it's a little tight in Edmonton right now, Carlo, just a little bit tight. And you might imagine that going in, the PR guys would be saying, you know, to the players, hey, and you'd have to know that, you'd have to understand, you know, I work with some really good PR guys over the years, and they grab the player and say, hey, it's really tense out there right now. Be smart, you know, and be patient, and there's a lot going on. And so the preparation is number one. And Matheson's a pro. He's been around a long time. He's seen a lot. And it's his job to ask questions. Now, could he have ended it after the second one? Yeah, he might have. He might have. But, you know, he saw an opportunity maybe to get a rise out of Draisaitl. And the acceptance is, I think, what frustrates people in that, you know, they assume that if a player is calm, cool, and collected, that he's accepting losing. And that's not the case at all. And I do think, you know, over the years, relationships with the media have changed dramatically for every reason possible. And, you know, there was a day when you had a relationship with the Jim Matheson, if you were Leon Draisaitl, you had a relationship. You knew him to a whole different level. Well, that hasn't been possible over the last couple of years. I mean, you know, covering Montreal as closely as I do, or you know, even Ottawa or Toronto, you don't get face-to-face. You don't sit with players in the locker room right now. You don't have that opportunity. There are players that are playing in the National Hockey League right now that nobody really knows because they've never had a chance to sit down beside them in a locker room, but not in a scrum. Sit down 45 minutes after everyone else is gone and talk to them and see what's going on in their lives. And, you know, we lost a dear departed one in Jay Greenberg. Did you get to know Jay, Carlo, when you were
not,
in Philadelphia?
No, I did not.
Yeah, kind of a legendary writer. And he passed just recently, and it brought to mind a lot of conversations. And I'm thinking specifically to how he helped me get through a tough situation, off-ice situation, how a media member helped a player, like, immensely. You know, it was a private family situation, and that we went through, and Jay was paramount when we went into cities that he would say, hey, Dave's not talking about this right now. He'd get ahead of it, you know, with all the other writers in the other cities. So they had roles that were just so much different than they have now. It wasn't adversarial. And the introduction of social media has taken it a step further. You know, if that conversation with Draisaitl goes on, you know, in a different day and age, we don't even know about it. You know, it's handled internally in Edmonton, and the player sits down with the writer after. But I just think it's a magnification of how tight it is in Edmonton right now. I mean, you know, they're watching the same movie over again. The fans are watching the same movie over again. Well, what about the players? Yeah. The players are watching the same movie over again. And they thought the changes were made over the course of the summer that would make them better. And it hasn't worked. I mean, it flat out hasn't worked. You know, and I received criticism, you know, when I said in a piece that it's really hard to change the core of your team. And, you know, Edmonton may have had an opportunity to over the course of the summer and chose not to. And they brought some of the same guys back. And that's fine because they thought it would work if they put you know, a Zach Hyman in the locker room or a Warren Fogel or a Duncan Keith, you know, in the locker room, that it would work with the core they had, but it hasn't. It flat out hasn't. And so I think that's just a reflection right now on Leon Draisaitl. He's not having fun playing in the National Hockey League right now, and he's one of the best players, and he's at the top of the scoring chart, and he's still not having fun. And that was shown pretty clearly in that interview.
In conversation with TSN hockey analyst Dave Poulin here on Leafs Breakfast. While things are really bad in Edmonton right now, things pretty good in Toronto for the Maple Leafs. They're in New York tonight to play the Rangers. Again, it's on TSN 1050. And one of our big conversations this morning, Dave, had to do with Jake Muzzin, who is out tonight with a concussion. He'll miss the rest of the week. So you're talking about a Leafs defense, at least for this evening, that is very inexperienced beyond Morgan Riley and TJ Brody. But when you look at the broader conversation about the Leafs defense, and I think we would all agree that Jake Muzzin hasn't had his best season this year. He's been banged up. He's had COVID. And he and Justin Hall have not been the second pair that we've become accustomed to over the last couple of years. If you were Kyle Dubas sitting in your office this morning and looking at your defense, not only for tonight, but for the next, you know, I guess for the rest of the season and into the playoffs, what would your level of concern be, and how aggressive would you be about upgrading your back end?
Well, I think it's always a conversation. And, you know, the oldest adage when I took over in management, you know, a veteran scout, Michael Penny, who's still with the Leafs, who ran the Marlies, who, you know, has been around the NHL forever. We got to a point with the Marlies where I think we had 9 or 10 healthy defensemen. And I said to Mike, we got too many defensemen. He looked at me and said, you never, ever have too many defensemen. And, you know, a couple of days later, somebody got hurt, somebody got sick, and all of a sudden we were using everybody. Just like you said, you never, ever have too many defensemen.
It's true.
It is so true. It really is in the depth, guys. And so from that standpoint, I do think the Leafs would be shopping, but as a number of teams would, because you're always looking for that guy. This is about getting Jake Muzzin back on track. And, you know, there's usually a crossover point with a veteran like Muzzin where – And Hall is a little different case because he's young in terms of experience, you know, still to a point, not in terms of age. But there's usually a swing point when, okay, Muzzin and Hall have been playing together, and, you know, Muzzin was the anchor of that pair when they started, and you're like, holy smokes, Hall may be able to be a top two pairing guy because he's playing with Muzzin. And then eventually you get to a point where it swings, and if Hall truly is a top two pairing guy, then the carry load shifts a little bit to the right side and says, okay, now, you know, Hall is really good and he's playing with Muzzin, not because he's playing with Muzzin. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure that's happened. I'm really not sure that's happened with Justin Hall. And so Jake Muzzin continues to get that load on, you know, plays big minutes and plays the role and is arguably the element back there on the backside. He's the biggest, most physical, and, you know, in front of the net and all of those pieces. So that would be the type of player you would look at acquiring, I think, more of a Muzzin-like player. But I think this is about getting Jake Muzzin right. And it's been such a strange year, guys, in terms of ebbs and flows of playing. And even looking at the Leafs schedule right now, Muzzin aside, Carly, you got to think you're back in the DEL. They play Wednesday and Saturday the next 2 weeks. And you're that's like, crazy. Okay, well, that's not an NHL schedule. And, you know, and they're 6 games behind Tampa, I believe, in how many games they've played, or 5 games behind Tampa in how many games they've played. Well, that's not too big of a gap, but it's going to get bigger over the next couple of weeks. And, you know, they're going to be able to manage their, I guess, their minutes and everything with some of their players over the next couple of weeks. But I am under the understanding that there's a new schedule coming out, guys, very
today,
shortly. Yeah, and that's been, you know, last night there was word, I was in the Ottawa press box, and there was word that, you know, guys were getting an indication of what was going to happen. And that's going to answer questions, too, in terms of workload for specific players. But right now, I'm worried about getting Jake Muzzin healthy, whatever he's dealing with, and getting him back to being the player that you know he's been for the Leafs very, very effectively over the last couple of years.
Yeah, and, you know, you talk about the schedule. I mean, it ain't going to get any easier for the Maple Leafs considering whatever's being announced. It's going to get be condensed because of all the games that they have to make up, too. So that's going to even
gap
further.
Right now, Carlo, the biggest gap right now is 9 games
yeah.
between how many teams how many games teams have played, and the Islanders and Ottawa have played 32, and there are teams at 41. So that's the biggest gap. If that increases over the next, you know, couple of days, and no one knows what's coming ahead, there's going to be a lot of worried managers when those schedules land over the next day and looking at it going, okay, how are we going to do this, and how many bodies are we going to need?
And that's going to further expose, or at least, you know, raise the eyebrows on the depth, especially on the defense of this Maple Leafs team. And we're getting a good look at it tonight with no Muzzin and no Hall, no second pairing in the lineup. And now you've got, you know, Sandin and Liljegren elevated to that role. What do you make, or, you know, especially a guy like Timothy Liljegren, scored his first goal in the NHL, you know, on Saturday, and is playing, you know, with a lot more confidence now. But where do you see him in this lineup, everybody fully healthy?
Well, I think he's fighting to be in the lineup if everybody's fully healthy. I think it's, you know, is it here, Travis Dermott, that you're more comfortable with? Is it the pairing of Sandin? Can Sandin move up in the lineup and, you know, and essentially take some of those matchup minutes away? Sandin's a nicely physical player. He's not overly big. And then you worry about that. One of the issues you and I talked about, Carlo, when Sandin first came in that's improved was he put himself in a vulnerable position when he first came up, and he got hit a lot and lit up a lot. He doesn't do that anymore. You know, he's through that. He doesn't put himself in bad positions anymore. But, you know, you start thinking now about the physical side of what's ahead, not only in terms of volume of games, but in terms of the intensity of games as things wrap up. And I think that in the East, it looks like you're pretty well determined who the top eight teams are going to be in the East. But how are they going to play out? And, you know, where are those two wildcard teams right now, Pittsburgh and Boston? Where are they going to push up to? Detroit is the next team right now in the standings. And, you know, and they've done a good job. But I don't see anybody below Detroit. Like, Philadelphia is showing no indication.
The only team that I would give the slightest hope towards, just because you mentioned they have so many games to make up, are the New York Islanders.
While I agree with you, Carlo, in terms of the team and the way they're coached and the makeup of them, what you start worrying about is, you know, when the game's in hand, you know, when you're a couple games back, you say, yeah, we got two games in hand. Yeah. When you're nine games behind, you say, holy smokes, we got to make up nine games in the exact same amount of time that the other team's playing theirs. And so when does that become a negative and that number too big? I agree with the actual team. But I think the bigger that gap gets, the more of a detriment it is to the Islanders. So if you say the top eight teams, you know, for argument's sake, are going to stay the same, where are you going to land in that mix? And who are you going to look at playing in the first round? And the other thing is that separation, the importance of that separation between the top eight, you know, and the bottom grouping, you got more dance partners, you know, at the trade deadline. You simply have more dance partners. And the more dance partners you have, the lower the price of acquisition is, and the lower you can, you know, the more you can go out and do at the trade deadline. The trade deadline is, I believe, March 15th. I think it's pushed back a little bit this year from where it normally is. And so, you know, a smaller increment on your cap, all those things that managers have to think about, but there might be more available, Carlo, to go out and get that defensive position just because of the separation between the top eight and the bottom eight.
Dave, one of the teams that are absolutely going to be very active at the deadline are the Montreal Canadiens. Kent Hughes announces their 18th general manager in club history yesterday. He and Jeff Gorton formed the Hockey Operations Leadership Group at the top there in Montreal. And there's been debates throughout, I guess, the last 12 to 18 hours about how Montreal should proceed. Should they go, quote-unquote, scorch earth and just trade away a bunch of players and really try to go young and kind of maybe even use the tank word for maybe not only this year, but for a year or two to come. When you look at Montreal, what they have currently on their NHL roster, what they have in their pipeline, how desirable of a job is that for Ken Hughes, considering they have a lot of players tied up to long-term deals? And how would you approach the Montreal situation as a whole?
There's got to be an evaluation period here, Aaron, because you can't evaluate this year in many, many ways, and they've still got some good players. And you see they win a game last night. Well, okay, well, Josh Anderson's back in the lineup, really? Well, Tyler Toffoli's played his first game in ages. I mean, they've got some good players who've played well in the National Hockey League. They haven't played well this year, or a lot of them haven't even played this year. So I think the simple step for them is to move the UFAs, and there are, you know, three or four of those, and Ben Sherratt is the absolute prize in that. We talk about, you know, a defensive acquisition that could change the makeup of your top four, or if he goes into a team as a 5-6, then you're going to be really, really deep. And so that's where you start. But then the issue becomes you really have to evaluate, you know, there's no-brainers. And Nick Suzuki's a no-brainer. Cole Caulfield, to me, is a no-brainer. And then you've got a lot of guys who have term left on their contracts.
Yeah, and significant be a tough one, term, man.
You know, 3, 4, 5 years. And they're still really good players, but how do they fit into Montreal? Like, Christian Dvorak is a mystery to me, guys. He's 25 years old. When he started this year, that, you know, I saw his first game. He had 4 points in his first game, and I thought, wow, what a great pickup this is. You know, he's only 25. You don't know a lot about him. I knew about him because he was a Chicago kid, and he was originally on a college track, and that changed. He went to London. He was a leading scorer in London. So guys like that, you know, they have 3 years left. Well, they're attractive to other teams in the league, but, you know, maybe not before the trade deadline. Those might be summer moves where you're reconstructing your team. A lot of work to be done in Montreal. I don't know Cantwell personally, professionally, you know, as an agent a little bit, but he's very well thought of in terms of the job he did as an agent. And Jeff Gorton has done it in New York in the way he kind of reconstructed around the build. Didn't, you know, that letter, I think that crazy letter that came out from the Rangers that stunned everyone. I think that was only 2018. And, you know, now 3.5 years later, they're a pretty good hockey club. So they kind of rebuilt on the fly. So I think that's more the model, Aaron, than scorched earth. Scorched earth is easy to say, but, you know, there's some contracts there that are not.
There's no chance they can do scorched earth. I mean, no one's taking on some of those contracts that Montreal has.
It's been Carey Price, right? Like, the Carey Price deal is what they have to figure out. And if they're going to keep him.
Not just Carey Price. You got Gallagher at 5 years, 6.5. You've got Anderson, 5 years at 6.5. Dvorak, 3 years at 4.5. Petrie at 3 years, 6.25. Who's taking those contracts?
Yeah, you've got a lot of money. But you've also got some pretty good hockey players there that can still play, you know, and be very effective in the National Hockey League. Those are, you know, it's just the makeup of that group right now that is very shattered. There's no question about it. It's the makeup of the entire group. And Carey Price, guys, that's the number one thing you've got to figure out, right? And it's not going to be figured out. It doesn't look like it this year.
No, it's a saga that seemingly never ends, and now he's restarting his rehab process. I don't know, but it's a complicated one for sure. And Ken Hughes
They're basically wording it in a sense where they're trying to make it seem like he's taking his time, but really they don't want him back this season.
Well, at this point, I mean.
Because, I mean, think of where the season has gone. It's a new vision of the team, and if you can put yourself in a position where you can win the offseason, and think about what Montreal's gone through this year, and you can put yourself in a position to win the offseason by maybe getting a chance to draft Shane Wright at home in Montreal at the draft. I mean, that would be the ultimate win to help restart that rebuild or whatever, a new season with the two guys that are now in charge.
Very much so. And Carey Price is about getting Carey Price healthy, both mentally and physically, all the way around. And it doesn't look like it's going to happen in this year. And why would you push that at this point?
Exactly.
Dave, thank you as always for joining us. Terrific insight as always. We appreciate it. And we'll chat with you again next week.
Thanks, guys. Have a great day.
There you too. Staple TSN hockey analyst live from Ottawa, Ontario. Mm-hmm. The morning after the Sens and the Sabres. Brady Tkachuk decking people and having a fight and
play
answer
in that
for
game
it.
Too. Did you see that? There was a big scrum near the benches and the whistle wasn't blown. And then Mark Jankowski, the player, just went in on a breakaway as there's like five guys on both teams in the scrum at the red line and scored for the Sabres, which is ultimately the game-winning goal. So, crazy stuff.
No doubt about that. No shortage of crazy stuff to discuss with Dave Feshuk when he joins us in about 15 minutes. We'll certainly talk about the Leon Draisaitl, Jim Matheson incident yesterday with the Oilers media availability, and, you know, Dave's been involved in his fair share of scrums and disagreements with players over the years, so we'll get Dave to reflect back on some of those. We'll also talk about the news yesterday that really wasn't that, not relevant would be the wrong term, but wasn't that newsworthy in that Michael Frisdahl, who is the the CEO and president of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment, stepping away from that role, and he was very anonymous, especially when compared to the predecessor of his in Tim Leiwicki, who is all over the media.
So that's what I meant to ask. He was the guy who replaced Tim Leiwicki.
Correct. Yes. Okay, yes. So though Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment will be looking for a replacement for Frisdahl after 6 years at the helm of Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment.
Where do I submit my application for that?
Yeah, I would be very curious to see your resume and why you think you're equipped to handle a $2 billion company. But you did have a 95 average in grade 13, so I think
damn,
that's probably
right,
number one.
Look what what I did to this radio show. Yeah. Took it from the bottom to the top, baby.
Yeah. The radio shows and multi-billion-dollar corporations, very similar in the way they're operated. I will say there are certain names, you know, kind of being bandied about as a possible selection as Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment President and CEO, including one Masai Ujiri. So you wonder how that could possibly work. And there have been rumors that Masai wants to get into politics or something for a greater good than just basketball. And you wonder if that's something that could be percolating in his mind right now.
$15 million a year doing.
They probably make a lot more with that role. I mean, that's one of you're running a massive corporation. And you could have a sizable impact. But then again, you're dealing with so much different stuff. And honestly, I'm not even really sure what Frisdahl was doing. Like, I don't know, because we just had heard so little of him and what he was about and what he wanted to accomplish. But clearly, that's a very significant job. And you will have people coming from all over the world being interested in that, including yourself, Carlo. So listen, I would hate to lose you on the show, but if you become the president and CEO of MLSE, I'll give you the thumbs up, buddy.
Okay, man. I want more than a thumbs up when I win it.
Okay, that'll be a big time. Bang! I'll be very impressed if you're able to secure that job. If you get an interview, I'll be impressed.
Bang! But, work that job.
Show your alumni jacket. You're like, sorry, guys, can't come to this meeting. I've got to play golf with Deli at 1 o'clock at Rattle.
Honestly, as much as I think I'd be capable of doing that job, I don't want it.
Okay,
hold
on. Okay, first, number one, you wouldn't be capable of doing that job. Here's actually a poll question. Rod, put this up. What would be, let me see how to phrase it. What job would Carlo be more capable of doing? A, NFL head coach. B, president and CEO of MLSC. I'll be curious to know our audience's response. Carlo, I think you're very confident in your voice.
Or C, all of the above.
That's right. You can do both. NFL coach, in the offseason, you can do the CEO thing. I think that's a very worthwhile
endeavor. I still can't believe.
May as well do radio, too.
I still can't believe that after all the stupidity that we've watched this year with NFL coaches, you guys still don't believe that I could be an NFL coach.
Oh, I think you could be an NFL coach, a truly atrocious one.
You're insane, buddy. You're insane.
All right, we'll talk to Feschuk in about 12 minutes. We'll look at the Raps and the Dallas Mavericks tonight. That's a really intriguing game. And then we will see Luka Doncic tonight. I love watching Luka play hoops. That guy is an unbelievable talent. And the Raptors are going to have their work cut out for them down in Dallas. The third hour, first up on the way. This is TSN 1050.